Welcome to day 170 of my Everyday Bible. This is Rita, your host from Hidden with Christ Ministries. This week we are reading from the New American Standard Bible, and today we will begin reading from the book of Ecclesiastes. So before we begin the reading, I'm going to just give you a few comments as introduction to this book. First of all, the word Ecclesiastes actually comes from a Greek word, ekklesia, which means assembly. And the word Ecclesiastes actually means one who convenes an assembly or one who addresses an assembly. And then in the English, it's often just simply translated the preacher or the teacher. And so the words of the book open with the words of the preacher, the son of David, king in Jerusalem. And this in itself gives us a hint or insight to the authorship of Ecclesiastes. It is commonly held by both Jewish and Christian scholars that the writer or author of Ecclesiastes was King Solomon himself, and it was most likely written at the very end of his life after he had been in a very backslidden spiritual state and had become quite far from God, an idolater, worshiping false gods, and perhaps at the end of his life was looking back on a time when he did know the Lord and had some insight into the absolute worthlessness of pursuing self-indulgence, indulging the flesh, as he did during his lifetime. So it's important to recognize while you listen to the words from the book of Ecclesiastes that they're not all like the words of God. They're actually, as it says in the very first verse, the words of the preacher. So you're going to hear kind of a negative or a despairing or depressing note from these words, but they have a very important meaning because the writer, King Solomon, uses the words vanity of vanities, all is vanity, over and over again, basically saying, what's the point of life? And you will hear him say things like this as we go through it. But the end or the conclusion that he comes to is that the only purpose of life is to fear God and keep his commandments. So when he goes through all of his various explorations of life and building things and pursuing pleasure and trying to explore natural knowledge in all its forms and coming up with the realization that none of it really means much without God, that is a right conclusion that he comes to at the end. So keep that note in mind as we read through the book of Ecclesiastes, that these are the words of a man who had fallen far from the Lord and perhaps is looking back on his life with the realization that the only thing that has any value in life is a relationship with the Lord. So beginning at Ecclesiastes chapter 1, verse 1. The words of the preacher, the son of David, king in Jerusalem. Vanity of vanities, says the preacher. Vanity of vanities, all is vanity. What advantage does man have in all his work which he does under the sun? A generation goes and a generation comes, but the earth remains forever. Also, the sun rises and the sun sets, and hastening to its place, it rises there again. Blowing toward the south and turning toward the north, the wind continues swirling along, and on its circular courses the wind returns. All the rivers flow into the sea, yet the sea is not full. To the place where the rivers flow, there they flow again. All things are wearisome. Man is not able to tell it. The eye is not satisfied with seeing, nor is the ear filled with hearing. That which has been is that which will be, and that which has been done is that which will be done. So there is nothing new under the sun. Is there anything of which one might say, see, this, it is new? Already it has existed for ages which were before us. There is no remembrance of earlier things, and also of the later things which will occur, there will be for them no remembrance among those who come later still. I, the preacher, have been king over Israel in Jerusalem, and I set my mind to seek and explore by wisdom concerning all that has been done under heaven. It is a grievous task which God has given to the sons of men to be afflicted with. I have seen all the works which have been done under the sun, and behold, all is vanity and striving after the wind. What is crooked cannot be straightened, and what is lacking cannot be counted. I said to myself, behold, I have magnified and increased wisdom more than all who were over Jerusalem before me, and my mind has observed a wealth of wisdom and knowledge. And I set my mind to know wisdom and to know madness and folly. I realize that this also is striving after wind, because in much wisdom there is much grief, and increasing knowledge results in increasing pain. Chapter 2. I said to myself, come now, I will test you with pleasure, so enjoy yourself. And behold, it too was futility. I said of laughter, it is madness. And of pleasure, what does it accomplish? I explored with my mind how to stimulate my body with wine while my mind was guiding me wisely, and how to take hold of folly until I could see what good there is for the sons of men to do under heaven the few years of their lives. I enlarged my works. I built houses for myself. I planted vineyards for myself. I made gardens and parks for myself, and I planted in them all kinds of fruit trees. I made ponds of water for myself from which to irrigate a forest of growing trees. I bought male and female slaves, and I had homeborn slaves. Also, I possessed flocks and herds, larger than all who preceded me in Jerusalem. Also, I collected for myself silver and gold, and the treasure of kings and provinces. I provided for myself male and female singers, and the pleasures of men, many concubines. Then I became great and increased more than all who preceded me in Jerusalem. My wisdom also stood by me. All that my eyes desired, I did not refuse them. I did not withhold my heart from any pleasure, for my heart was pleased because of all my labor, and this was my reward for all my labor. Thus I considered all my activities which my hands had done, and the labor which I had exerted, and behold, all was vanity and striving after wind, and there was no profit under the sun. So I turned to consider wisdom, madness, and folly. For what will the man do who will come after the king except what has already been done? And I saw that wisdom excels folly as light excels darkness. The wise man's eyes are in his head, but the fool walks in darkness. And yet I know that one fate befalls them both. Then I said to myself, as in the fate of the fool, it will also befall me. Why then have I been extremely wise? So I said to myself, this too is vanity. For there is no lasting remembrance of the wise man as with the fool, inasmuch as in the coming days all will be forgotten, and how the wise man and the fool alike die. So I hated life, for the work which had been done under the sun was grievous to me, because everything is futility and striving after wind. Thus I hated all the fruit of my labor, for which I had labored under the sun. For I must leave it to the man who will come after me, and who knows whether he will be a wise man or a fool. Yet he will have control over all the fruit of my labor, for which I have labored by acting wisely under the sun. This too is vanity. Therefore, I completely despaired of all the fruit of my labor, for which I had labored under the sun. When there is a man who has labored with wisdom, knowledge, and skill, then he gives his legacy to one who has not labored with them. This too is vanity and a great evil. For what does a man get in all his labor and in his striving with which he labors under the sun? Because all his days his task is painful and grievous, even at night his mind does not rest. This too is vanity. There is nothing better for a man than to eat and drink and tell himself that his labor is good. This also I have seen, that it is from the hand of God. For who can eat and who can have enjoyment without him? For to a person who is good in his sight, he has given wisdom and knowledge and joy, while to the sinner he has given the task of gathering and collecting so that he may give to the one who is good in God's sight. This too is vanity and striving after wind. Chapter 3. There is an appointed time for everything, and there is a time for every event under heaven, a time to give birth and a time to die, a time to plant and a time to uproot what is planted, a time to kill and a time to heal, a time to tear down and a time to build up, a time to weep and a time to laugh, a time to mourn and a time to dance, a time to throw stones and a time to gather stones, a time to embrace and a time to shun embracing, a time to search and a time to give up as lost, a time to keep and a time to throw away, a time to tear apart and a time to sew together, a time to be silent and a time to speak, a time to love and a time to hate, a time for war and a time for peace. What profit is there to the worker from that in which he toils? I have seen the task which God has given the sons of men with which to occupy themselves. He has made everything appropriate in its time. He has also set eternity in their heart, yet so that man will not find out the work which God has done from the beginning even to the end. I know that there is nothing better for them than to rejoice and to do good in one's lifetime. Moreover, that every man who eats and drinks sees good in all his labor, it is the gift of God. I know that everything God does will remain forever. There is nothing to add to it, and there is nothing to take from it, for God has so worked that men should fear him. That which is has been already, and that which will be has already been, for God seeks what has passed by. Furthermore, I have seen under the sun that in the place of justice there is wickedness, and the place of righteousness there is wickedness. I said to myself, God will judge both the righteous man and the wicked man, for a time for every matter and for every deed is there. I said to myself concerning the sons of men, God has surely tested them in order for them to see that they are but beasts. For the fate of the sons of men and the fate of beasts is the same. As one dies, so dies the other. Indeed, they all have the same breath, and there is no advantage for man over beast, for all is vanity. All go to the same place, all come from the dust, and all return to the dust. Who knows that the breath of man ascends upward and the breath of the beast descends downward to the earth? I have seen that nothing is better than that man should be happy in his activities, for that is his lot. For who will bring him to see what will occur after him? Chapter 4. Then I looked again at all the acts of oppression which were being done under the sun, and behold, I saw the tears of the oppressed, and that they had no one to comfort them. And on the side of their oppressors was power, but they had no one to comfort them. So I congratulated the dead who are already dead, more than the living who are still living. Better off than both of them is the one who has never existed, who has never seen the evil activity that is done under the sun. I have seen that every labor and every skill which is done is the result of rivalry between a man and his neighbor. This too is vanity and striving after wind. The fool folds his hands and consumes his own flesh. One hand full of rest is better than two fists full of labor and striving after wind. Then I looked again at vanity under the sun. There was a certain man without a dependent, having neither a son nor a brother, yet there was no end to all his labor. Indeed, his eyes were not satisfied with riches, and he never asked, "And for whom am I laboring and depriving myself of pleasure?" This too is vanity, and it is a grievous task. Two are better than one because they have a good return for their labor. For if either of them falls, the one will lift up his companion. But woe to the one who falls when there is not another to lift him up. Furthermore, if two lie down together, they keep warm. But how can one be warm alone? And if one can overpower him who is alone, two can resist him. A cord of three strands is not quickly torn apart. A poor yet wise lad is better than an old and foolish king who no longer knows how to receive instruction. For he has come out of prison to become king, even though he was born poor in his kingdom. I have seen all the living under the sun throng to the side of the second lad who replaces him. There is no end to all the people, to all who were before them, and even the ones who will come at later will not be happy with him. For this too is vanity and striving after wind. Chapter 5. Guard your steps as you go to the house of God, and draw near to listen rather than to offer the sacrifice of fools, for they do not know they are doing evil. Do not be hasty in word or impulsive in thought to bring up a matter in the presence of God, for God is in heaven and you are on the earth. Therefore, let your words be few. For the dream comes through much effort, and the voice of a fool through many words. When you make a vow to God, do not be late in paying it, for he takes no delight in fools. Pay what you vow. It is better that you should not vow than you should vow and not pay. Do not let your speech cause you to sin, and do not say in the presence of the messenger of God that it was a mistake. Why should God be angry on account of your voice and destroy the work of your hands? For in many dreams and in many words there is emptiness. Rather, fear God. If you see oppression of the poor and denial of justice and righteousness in the province, do not be shocked at the sight, for one official watches over another official, and there are higher officials over them. After all, a king who cultivates the field is an advantage to the land. He who loves money will not be satisfied with money, nor he who loves abundance with its income. This too is vanity. When good things increase, those who consume them increase. So what is the advantage to their owners except to look on? The sleep of the working man is pleasant, whether he eats little or much, but the full stomach of the rich man does not allow him to sleep. There is a grievous evil which I have seen under the sun, riches being hoarded by their owner to his hurt. When those riches were lost through a bad investment, and he had fathered a son, then there was nothing to support him. As he had come naked from his mother's womb, so he will return as he came. He will take nothing from the fruit of his labor that he can carry in his hand. This also is a grievous evil. Exactly as a man is born, thus will he die. So what is the advantage to him who toils for the wind? Throughout his life, he also eats in darkness with great vexation, sickness, and anger. Here is what I have seen to be good and fitting: to eat, to drink, and enjoy oneself in all one's labor in which he toils under the sun during the few years of his life which God has given him, for this is his reward. Furthermore, as for every man to whom God has given riches and wealth, he has also empowered him to eat from them and to receive his reward and rejoice in his labor. This is the gift of God, for he will not often consider the years of his life, because God keeps him occupied with the gladness of his heart. Chapter 6. There is an evil which I have seen under the sun, and it is prevalent among men. A man to whom God has given riches and wealth and honor, so that his soul lacks nothing of all that he desires, yet God has not empowered him to eat from them, for a foreigner enjoys them. This is vanity and a severe affliction. If a man fathers 100 children and lives many years, however many they may be, but his soul is not satisfied with good things and he does not even have a proper burial, then I say, better the miscarriage than he, for it comes in futility and goes into obscurity, and its name is covered in obscurity. It never sees the sun, and it never knows anything. It is better off than he. Even if the other man lives 1,000 years twice and does not enjoy good things, do not all go to the one place? All a man's labor is for his mouth, and yet the appetite is not satisfied. For what advantage does the wise man have over the fool? What advantage does the poor man have, knowing how to walk before the living? What the eyes see is better than what the soul desires. This too is futility and a striving after wind. Whatever exists has already been named, and it is known what man is, for he cannot dispute with him who is stronger than he is. For there are many words which increase futility. What then is the advantage to a man? For who knows what is good for a man during his lifetime, during the few years of his futile life? He will spend them like a shadow. For who can tell a man what will be after him under the sun? This is the end of today's scripture reading. In these first 6 chapters from the book of Ecclesiastes, we see that the writer, King Solomon, essentially states the purpose of his writing in the 3rd verse of this first chapter. He asks this question: what advantage does man have in all his work which he does under the sun? And then the next 6 chapters essentially go through all of the things that he explores, trying to answer whether a person's life and all the work that they do during that lifetime have any value or profit whatsoever. And he goes through different things that he himself explored in his natural mind, and how the conclusion he reaches with all of them is that it's all vanity. He explored hard work and becoming somebody who was a great builder of many buildings and a builder of gardens, and he said it's all vanity. He talked about amassing material goods and how that was all vanity. He talked about seeking pleasure for himself in all forms, essentially pursuing hedonism, pleasure for the sake of pleasure. And he was certainly able to obtain any pleasure imaginable on the earth because of his vast wealth and his position as king. And yet his conclusion, after exploring pleasure was that it was all worthless and vain and empty and gave him no lasting pleasure. And then in chapter 5, we heard how riches in and of themselves are meaningless, and however rich a person may be, he never seems to have enough. Even though the reality is you can only consume so much of your riches. And I want to actually talk about this idea of riches and materialism in today's devotional. But I want to start by giving you an example from the life of a very wealthy man who died in 1990. And his name was Malcolm Forbes. And you may know the name Forbes from the magazine which bears his name, and actually his grandfather and great-grandfather's name, because Malcolm Forbes was a multimillionaire, a business genius, financial genius, as it were. And today, the Forbes magazine, which is edited by his son, Stephen Forbes, is probably best known for its amazing lists that it comes out with every year. One, the lists of all the billionaires in the earth, the Forbes 400, the 400 richest men or women in America, and various lists of this sort. So that's one of its most probably well-known to the general population, this that they come out with every single year in Forbes magazine. But Malcolm Forbes was a very interesting person. In fact, there was a book written about his life that was entitled Malcolm Forbes, The Man Who Had Everything. And the illustration I want to give you is from that book. In the book, there's a story told about Malcolm Forbes that he was on a motorcycle tour through the nation of Egypt. And this man loved motorcycles. He collected motorcycles, the most expensive motorcycles that could be had. Malcolm Forbes collected them. While he was on this motorcycle tour through Egypt, he came upon, of course, the famous burial tomb of King Tut. And after seeing this, he seemed to be in a reflective mood, thinking no doubt about life and death. And the book tells us that as Malcolm Forbes and his entourage were returning to the hotel they were staying at in their shuttle bus, Forbes turned to one of his associates and asked, with all sincerity, "Do you think I'll be remembered after I die?" Now, this motorcycle tour took place in 1984, and he died 6 years later in 1990. And I want to say that Forbes is remembered, but probably he's remembered for a certain phrase that he coined and that became sort of popular in the United States. You may have seen it on bumper stickers some years ago. And it said this: "He who dies with the most toys wins." That was the conclusion that this multimillionaire, who was quite a collector of toys, so to speak, that's his conclusion in life. He was a collector of motorcycles, as I said earlier, also of art. He was known to have paid over $1 million for a Fabergé egg, which is a certain art object that was designed by the Russian artist Fabergé. He owned castles, he owned hot air balloons, and many other goodies or toys, as they are known, that he can no longer access because he died in 1990. So this was the conclusion of the multimillionaire who collected so many material possessions. He who dies with the most toys wins. And yet, today, we heard in the book of Proverbs that the wisest man that ever lived, aside from Jesus Christ himself, of course, Solomon, and a man who probably was far wealthier than Malcolm Forbes, and one who had collected all sorts of treasures and every type of pleasure that could be bought under the sun, came to a much different conclusion. In the book of Ecclesiastes, we heard Solomon's words that essentially told us that riches in and of themselves are meaningless, and even great accomplishments in life don't give meaning to a person's existence outside of a relationship with God. Malcolm Forbes' conclusion that he who dies with the most toys wins, of course, was completely false. And no doubt he found that out when he died. It's important for us who live today in a very materialistic society where money and pleasure and material goods are sought after with such vigor and such energy by people all over the earth, even people in poor countries. They're always trying to get money. People in rich countries, they're trying to get more money. They're trying to accumulate more possessions. And yet, this book of Ecclesiastes, even though it has a rather sad tone to it, does bring us the reality and the truth that riches and material goods without God in your life absolutely have no meaning whatsoever. And truthfully, when you die, they will have absolutely no meaning whatsoever. Whether you are rich or poor during life will not mean anything. And truly, death is the great equalizer in the sense that every man, whether a person was rich in life or poor in life, will stand before the Lord. And the only thing that will matter will be what relationship that person had with his maker during his lifetime. So that is a thought to consider today. If you're frustrated with your lack of finances or lack of material goods, don't be frustrated. What's only going to matter in the end is what relationship you cultivated with the Lord Himself. He's able to help you with your finances, and He will, as you put your trust in Him. But don't let your lack of material goods in this life in any way depress you, because truthfully, in the end, the one who has the deepest relationship with God is the one who wins. So I want to encourage you, cultivate your relationship with the Lord, and that will give meaning to your life, purpose to your life, and joy to your life. God bless you and have a victorious week.